discover the power of positivity. Identify your gifts. Then plan and execute your passion. And ultimately, thrive exponentially in life. And most importantly, in business. On Sudden Eye Impact with your host, Lee. The environment you put me in, greater than, greater than. The circumstances that I'm faced with, greater than, greater than. The environment you put me in, greater than, greater than. The circumstances that I'm faced with, greater than. Yes, and your life counts, and enthusiasm definitely makes a difference. Hello and welcome to the Sudden Eye Impact Show, with your host Lee coming to you from the DFW Metroplex. On our show, we have fun together, we learn together, and we encourage one another. On the show, we discuss a variety of topics such as, but not limited to, personal responsibility, support systems, accountability, accountability partners, creative vision, belief systems, the power of belief, the power of thought, the power of partnership, the power of words, entrepreneurship, visionary leadership, creativity, consciousness, awareness, being the observer, service, innovation, imagination, finances, relationships, goal setting, and goal attainment, to name a few. On our show, we share concepts, principles, processes, and systems that work if you work them, that deliver good and great results. The show's mission, purpose, and intention is to discuss simple, basic, fundamental ways to help everyday people experience more fulfillment, satisfaction, enrichment, enjoyment, health, mental health, and overall peace, utilizing your own latent resources that lie dormant within you. The show is spiritual, inspirational, and motivational, expressing electrifying, energetic, and powerful content that anyone can take and apply to any area of their life to change their life for the better and to change their life for the best. On today's show, we have a special guest, Mr. Clint Adams. I believe he's from Victoria, Australia. He studied psychology at university, joined the police force, and has done a lot of work in rehabilitation counseling, and currently resides in HR and does special projects for the police department in rehabilitation. With no further ado, Mr. Clint Adams.
Good morning. How are you going?
Wonderful. If you'd like to, you can kind of just tell everybody who you are, how they can get in touch with you. Kind of tell them
sure.
The story and so on and so forth.
Yeah, so I guess I'm really on here because recently I just wrote a book which is around helping people with suicide prevention. It's been a passion of mine for many years. As you said, you know, with police as a police officer, I've studied psychology, I've been a counsellor, and I've worked with lots and lots of people over the years in HR and a number of other roles that I've had. And I guess for me, you know, your introduction is very true about, you know, how you want to try and change lives and how, I guess, even my career has changed what I've wanted to do and how I've wanted to help and have an impact on, you know, other people and how I can contribute, I guess, in a meaningful way. So I won't bore you with the details of my career as a person so much, but more around the reason for the book and how it kind of evolved. So I guess over the years as a police officer, you know, unfortunately you come into contact with lots and lots of people who are, say, disadvantaged or have real risk. You know, their parents aren't exactly, and I'm talking about young young people, kids, who, you know, for various reasons, you know, the parents aren't exactly great parents and you know, they're really going to struggle to come out the other end as good citizens and good people. So a big part of the motivation for writing the book and doing the studies and doing the stuff that I've done, which has led to the point of doing this book, has been around seeing that and kind of wanting to try and change that for people who are behind the eight ball, I guess. And so, you know, over the years I've as I said, I've worked with lots of more adults in the HR space, more adults with, you know, incarceration and law enforcement, but you also see these young kids. Obviously, all these people that are adults have been kids once upon a time And I guess you rewind and look at, you know, what happened and what could we have done earlier on to kind of change that path that they've kind of ended up on. So, you know, for me, the book's been a lot of neuroscience. We've certainly, you know, got a lot more information now than when I started studying many, many years ago at university, where we can kind of look at how the neuropsych is based and all that, excuse me, all that's kind of, you know, panned out over a person's life. And so I've put a lot of that stuff into practical sense. A lot of the information and stuff we study and work are very academic-based stuff, and I don't think it's always practical for, you know, the average person to kind of put into practice. So a big part of how I've written the book is based around that. So I've written the book as a story about a young person who's been bullied and don't know how to deal with it. And ultimately they're on the verge of suicide, and what they want to do is kind of get a message out to people that, you know, as much as their life's over kind of thing, or about to be over, that they want to see some change from bully. I want to see some change from the people that encourage the bully, and they want to see some change from the schools and the people that could have kind of made a difference but didn't really act or didn't know how to act in the right way. So essentially the book revolves around this person's sending that message out to these people, and then I'm kind of a character in the book to kind of help the school deal with it, help the parents deal with it, and then so there's the suicide part, but then there's also the what do we do next kind of part, where I think, you know, I guess I'm probably, in the book, I'm kind of challenging the education system around what we do, how we focus on stuff, especially early on in children's lives. A lot of things we don't realise is, you know, if you think of suicide rates and stuff, you know, it's very rare for anybody under the age of kind of 12 to commit suicide, and there's a big reason for that. It's around, you know, how susceptible they are, how resilient they are, and what they're thinking about. We don't kind of get to that point until we're older, and there's a number of reasons for that. So I think in those early, you know, ages 4-12, we can have a massive impact at an education level with how people can become more resilient and focus on things a bit differently. But I guess the education department or the education system, don't really focus on that enough. And there's a number of kind of initiatives that I think we need to at least consider. I'm not saying that, you know, what I'm suggesting in the book is the only way to do stuff. It's definitely not. But there's, you know, there's many ways to the top of this mountain. And I just think a message I guess I've been trying to get out through the book is about us at least looking at different options. And a lot earlier on, I just think that, you know, we do have a system that's probably, you know, been the same or similar for many years, and we don't kind of focus on the psychology side of helping our children kind of develop in stronger ways and become more resilient. So that's kind of the nutshell version of, you know, the motivation of the book.
Nice. Do you mind, you know, taking us through some of your defining moments?
Sure. So, I guess for me, when I first joined the police force, I straight out of university, I wanted to kind of go more into forensic psychology, and, you know, back in the day when Silence of the Lambs and, you know, profiling and all that was pretty new and pretty big. So that was kind of how I started out. But then I had a kind of change of a defining moment, as you call it, where with the way our system works here in Australia, I was in one of the bigger police stations, and we were kind of next to the courthouse. So when people were going to court, they would obviously, if they weren't bailed, they'd be in our custody, and we would look after them while they go to court. And because the court and our police station was right next to each other, you get to look after the prisoners quite a bit. In Australia, we kind of had, you know, a lot less female prisoners. And so in a nutshell, you can't put the males and the females together. So you'd have kind of these big exercise yards. And this one particular time, I was in charge of all the prisoners, and And essentially, there's only this one female in there, and you know, it's kind of lonely and stuff. So you kind of get talking to them. Anyway, I won't bore you with too much detail, but you know, she was a drug addict, and she'd been in and out of not prison, but you know, spent a bit of time petty stuff, and she kind of had been caught stealing again, and she had a suspended sentence over her head, so she knew she was going to do some serious time, 2 to 3 years kind of thing. You know, I got talking to her, and she told me, you know, she had a very young daughter, like less than 2 years old. She'd obviously gone down the wrong path with heroin addiction and the people she was hanging around with. And anyway, long story short, at the time I was studying to do counselling as well, so I kind of put some of what I'd learned into practice, and I kind of talked to her about, you know, how she needs to kind of focus and use the time that she does go inside to really focus on what she actually wanted. You know, she kind of hadn't really done that before. She was probably early 20s, and it was just about getting her to focus on what she actually wanted rather than, you know, where she was right now and the negative side of, you know, she'd obviously done some things that wasn't very good, just put herself in this predicament. It's about taking responsibility for herself, but also really focusing on what she actually wanted. Anyway, you know, she was in there for a few days, and next thing you know, come to work and she's gone. So she's obviously gone to prison. She got 2 or 3 years, I think, at the time. And I didn't think too much of it. And about maybe a year or so later, I was going on a run. I had a couple of regular runs I used to go on. And I'm quite a dark-skinned person, so I kind of stand out a bit more here in Australia than probably the US, where you've probably got a bigger mix of darker people than we have here in Australia. And, anyway, I was doing this run one day, and this person comes running out of this house as I'm running past, and I look at her and I realise it's the same lady, and she's come on a bit more weight. She was, you know, very underweight before, and I recognise that it's her. And the next thing you know, she's like, "Oh, I just wanted to stop you." She said, "Look, you know, after we'd spoken and spent time in the cells, and the stuff you said about focusing," she said, "you know, I really had to ask some big questions of myself. I made some changes. I really focused on what I did want. I wanted to get back to my daughter. I put my life back on track." And so she said, you know, she was able to do that. She'd become a model citizen in prison, and she was given an early release. And so she was, you know, living with her parents. That was a parents' house she'd just come out of. And so it clearly had a big impact on her. And, you know, at the time I became quite emotional that I'd been able to, I guess, have this effect on this person. And that kind of changed my path in terms of what I wanted to do with my own career. And I guess that's kind of how I went down the path of you know, wanting to really get involved in counselling. I then became a counsellor and worked with people with PTSD and all that kind of stuff for a few years, and really got into change management, I guess, if you want to put a spin on it. Like even the HR roles I had were all around change management, developing leaders, trying to, you know, get people to get to a better place and encourage them to do stuff better, and that all came, you know, over the years. That's kind of been what I've been working on, and this latest chapter with the book has been me kind of really working into, you know, running suicide prevention sessions. I've got some sessions right now with some sporting teams where we've had a young person suicide earlier this year, and so they're encouraging me to work with the sports organization. But you know, you really need to also involve the parents. So I kind of do a combination of working with the kids but also working with the parents in terms of, you know, how they're interacting with the kids, how they need to create. Because one of the big issues with, you know, I guess mental health is that people still have the stigma, so they don't talk about things as much as they should. So part of, you know, the big push for me is about how we can overcome them not wanting to talk. You know, why do they go to silence? Why do people feel that, you know, it's a weakness to show mental health or mental illness and show, I guess, emotion, you know, especially with males too. It's even more dominant. You know, obviously Australia and America probably have some similarities with the cultural feel about, you know, being the, you're the man, you've got to be the, you know, don't, you know, the more strong person, and that kind of instilled in a lot of different cultures. as well. So part of the process is about us being comfortable to have that conversation and not judge people, or males or females, no matter who it is, that, you know, showing emotion and talking about your mental health is somehow a bad thing. So a big part of that is also encouraging the parents to understand that they need to create the safety for their kids to have those conversations, that, you know, I'm not going to judge you if you're struggling with stuff. You know, mental health is something we can all have. Things can happen to us in our lives. Like, we're never able to stop everything from happening. I know we want to protect our children, but essentially you can't stop life, right? So things will happen. People will die. People close to you will die. There'll be events that, you know, will impact on you. But it's that how we bounce back and encouraging that resilience that's, you know, really important. And I just don't think we probably do that enough. Like, even as parents, we probably don't know enough about this stuff to do it. I'm a parent myself, and, you know, my kids have grown up now, but I certainly didn't know this stuff back then as a 23-year-old or a 25-year-old when my two kids were born. To even, you know, if I was doing it all over again, I'd certainly do things a lot different. Like, I'm pretty lucky my kids, you know, are pretty good in terms of where they're at, but still, you know, looking back and looking at how it can impact other people, I would have loved to have known a lot of the stuff I've put in the book, because this is, you know, 30 years of study, 30 years of being around people, doing lots of different things, and I guess, you know, trying to work out, you know, how can we do this better, and I guess that's, you know, what I'm, the thing about the book is there's a lot of QR codes in there, there's a lot of stuff about neuroscience, I don't go into the depth of it all, but, you know, the QR codes are there to hyperlink you to more information, so if someone really wants to know more about neuropsych, they can go and find out. If they, you know, the book's written in a way that I think, you know, it's easy to understand. So, you know, young people, teenagers and stuff like that, they can understand the book pretty easily. If they do want to go to find more depth to some of the knowledge stuff, then there's those links in the book to do that. I kind of wanted the book to be interactive. And at the same time, I didn't want it to be a dictator kind of book where, say, you know, you need to do this, you need to do that. To me, there's lots of ways to the top of this mountain. And a lot of it is about whatever makes you focus in a different way. And that's the key part. Like, when I was with the lady in the cells, you know, the big part for me was to get her to focus on a future state, using a different part of the brain that focuses on the future, which is not your amygdala, which kind of has the fight or flight component. And one of the key themes through my career is really seeing that people that really, I guess, wallow in self-pity and focus on what happened to them and their predicament, they use a part of the brain that kind of keeps them stuck. And for me, any kind of initiative has to be something that gets them focusing on a future state where they're not using that part of the brain and they're using something, I guess, you know, some people call it hope, some people call it lots of things. And again, there's many ways to do that. Like, you know, some people find religion and that works for them. Some people find fitness and that works for them. But again, it's about that focus and getting them to focus in a more positive way about what do you really want. When, you know, even those books like The Secret and all that kind of stuff, it's all kind of, there's a similar pattern to it. It's all about where you're focusing and where you want to get to. So if you're focusing on a much better state rather than, you know, looking backwards, you have a much better opportunity to kind of come up with a solution. You're changing your brain wave. There's all this different actual science behind our brains and the neuroscience stuff, which we don't probably use or understand well enough to really make an impact on ourselves. So I guess, you know, that's kind of a big part of it.
Thank you. Nicely stated. A lot of good information being put out there for y'all. So as we get ready, I would say to everybody, you are supported by the universe. You are loved by the universe. You are liked by the universe. It's important, like he stated, that life happens. People die, events transpire, and you have to deal with life as it is, not as you wish it to be or, you know, some fairy tale thing. You have to deal with life as it is. So with that being said, it's very important that you love yourself and that you accept yourself. Your life is important, whether you currently feel like it or you don't. If you don't have any family members around you to reach out to, there's public health. I mean, reach out to someone and let them know how you're feeling. Your life is important. Your energy is important. I'm going to give a couple of quotes before I wrap up. Quote, the desire to be important is the deepest urge in human nature, period, end of quote. John Dewey. Another quote, the deepest principle in human nature is the craving to be appreciated, period, end of quote. Psychologist William James. And what I want to say to everybody out there, if you have 100 peanuts, you have to start eating the first one. You can't eat all 100 at the same time. So with that being said, take one small step at a time. If you're in a dark place right now and you don't see any light, the first thing you need to do is reach out to a family member, reach out to public assistance, reach out to someone. Acknowledge that you need help and then seek help. It will be okay. This is not the way the story ends. It will be okay. Let go, let God. Everything will work itself out. And he tapped on that just a second ago, talking about the amygdala, which is fight, flight, or freeze, do nothing. If you need help, the most important thing you can do is get help. You are loved. You are supported. You are important. You would not have made it into the earth realm if you weren't important. Just know, trust, and believe that. I have a quote from Oprah Winfrey, and it says, quote, I will begin to totally apply myself fully and take responsibility for my life. I will close the door to my troubled past and reconstruct my life on the solid foundation of divine guidance. Adhering to both promises to myself, I have now set my mind free and at ease, period, end of quote. Oprah Winfrey. Be the change you want to see. Be an agent of change. Be an ambassador of change. First, you will change you, and then your world and everything in it will change. Until the next time, do what you know to do and use your faith. Yes, and your life counts, and enthusiasm definitely makes a difference. Hello, and welcome to the Sudden Eye Impact Show with your host, Lee, coming to you from the DFW Metroplex. On our show, we have fun together, we learn together, and we encourage one another. On the show, we discuss a variety of topics such as, but not limited to, spirit and mind, personal responsibility, support systems, imagination, accountability partners, creative vision, belief systems, the power of belief, the power of thought, the power of words, the power of partnership, entrepreneurship, visionary leadership, creativity, consciousness, awareness, being the observer, visualization, service, innovation, finances, relationships, goal setting, and goal attainment, to name a few. On our show, we share concepts, principles, processes, and systems that work if you work them, that deliver good and great results. The show's mission, purpose, and intention is to discuss simple, basic, fundamental ways to help everyday people experience more fulfillment, satisfaction, enrichment, enjoyment, health, mental health, and overall peace through utilizing your own latent resources that lie dormant within you. The show is spiritual, inspirational, and motivational, expressing electrifying, energetic, and powerful content that anyone can take and apply to any area of their life to change their life for the better or to change their life for the best. I have a reading here.
Charn is
with us. It is by Molafi Asante. There are two things over which you have complete dominion, authority and control. Your mind and your mouth. Your mind is an instrument, a precious gift to be valued and cared for. You are not always in control of what goes into your mind, but only you can determine what stays there. If you allow negativity to pervade in your mind, you will produce that negativity with your mouth. Your mouth is the mechanism that reveals how well you care for your mind. The conditions in your life stem from the most dominant thoughts of which you speak. Nothing has a hold on your mind that you cannot break free of. Since your mind will respond to what is said to you, speak to the conditions in your life. When they are wanted, give thanks. When they are unwanted, demand they change. You must affirm this, believe this, and affirm it strongly. I am in control of my mind and my mouth. With no further ado, we'll be going to our guest today for the first half of the show. His name is Jarin Banks. He has compiled a body of work of more than 25 years of the tech industry, transformational leadership, coaching. He's about to release a new book, and he has a huge goal of helping 1 billion people live by design, doing the work that they enjoy and love, as he has designed his own life. With no further ado, Mr. Jarin Banks.
Thank you. Thank you, Dwight.
Glad you could join us.
Welcome, everyone. Yes. Welcome, everyone, around the world, out in the galactic universe, if our feed is getting that far, which I know it is. Today I'm going to talk about something that's very important to me, is near and dear to my heart, and it's actually going to be a little exercise that we're going to go through here. So if you're listening live right now, I'll give you a little bit of time. If you can find some paper and a pen or a pencil, so if you have a journal or a notebook, if you're in front of a computer and you can type, this is a good way to do that also. Maybe it's on your phone. Maybe you don't have anything to write with right now. You can always come back and listen to this show again and be able to go through some of these questions that I'm going to ask. So one of the most important things I have noticed in my own life, and also with successful people, mentors, people that I look up to that have demonstrated certain characteristics that I would like to emulate or copy, many people will say, you know, they'll say, well, they had the answers. They knew what to go do. And actually, I've realized that the answer is in the question. So many people, and this comes directly from the scriptures, right? In the Bible, it talks about seek and you shall find, right? So you have to seek something and then you'll find it. Many people are looking to find something, but they forget about the seeking part, right? They're not actually opening up themselves to get the answer that they're looking for. And I'll give you a perfect example. When you go online to the internet and you go to Google or DuckDuckGo or whatever browser you're going to use to search, you don't just go to Google and you sit there and you get upset or you get angry because Google's not giving you the answer. You actually type in what you're looking for. You know, if you're looking for a particular type of food or directions or a type of book or whatever, you put that information in and then you get search results back and then you start to go through that to find the item that best fits what you're actually looking for. So you still take an additional step of seeking and throwing out things that don't quite match, and then you find the thing that you're looking for and you go read that and you research it and you may go find something else, or you may come out with three or four different solutions for what you're looking for. So many times in our lives, if we take a step back, we can ask ourselves questions that will start to give you data and information about your own life. That's right there. It's right there in front of you. You just haven't taken the time to ask the question. And so today we're going to go through some questions. And these questions are going to make you think about yourself. We're going to start with the self, right? With you, what's going on internally, and then we'll start to move outside of yourself. And I'll give a few examples of how I would answer these questions, or how I actually would answer those today, meaning your answer could be totally different tomorrow or in the future. But these are some things that I wanted to share today because, again, taking the time to be able to review your own life, your own thoughts, your own feelings, your own results, this is going to give you a good analysis of where you are and where you want to go. So the first question I'm going to ask is, who am I? Now, when I ask this question to myself, this one, I have to admit, is ongoing, right? It's an answer that continually morphs and changes. I've gotten to a point now in my life where I believe I am a spiritual being. And that may go more into a question of what am I, right? So I'll also ask that of myself, what am I? So right now my answer would be, I'm a spiritual being in a physical body, experiencing life and being on the earth through this vehicle, which is my physical body. Now, when I go back to the question of who am I still kind of sit there and I say, man, really, but who am I? Am I based on what I've done in this life? Am I based, you know, if I look at my name, Jaron Keto Banks, well, that's a name, but that doesn't really describe accurately who I am. And then a part of who I am is a choice. Right, so that gets into the level of who we really are, right? You start to say, well, you know, who I choose to be, do I have a choice in that matter? And so I'll leave it there because I wanted to ask that beginning question because that's a very deep question, meaning we could probably sit with that question for a couple hours and go through all types of other questions and ideals, right? So let's go a little bit further. But that's a great one to start with. So we just covered who am I, then what am I? And I'll jump back to that, right? My answer is I'm a spiritual being in a physical body here on the earth. Some people may say I'm a human being. Some people may say I'm a person. Some people may say I'm an American. Some people may say I'm a man, I'm a woman, I'm an adult. As you start to answer that question, you'll be able to see what you have identified yourself with. Now, the key item is whatever you've identified yourself with, like for me, I say I'm a spiritual being. Well, then you can go deeper. Well, what is a spiritual being? Right. So now that I get into that realm, now that question starts to expand beyond the earth. It automatically, for me, expands beyond the earth limitations. So then I'm like, well, I came from somewhere before I came to the earth, and then I will be going somewhere when I leave the earth. Now that's my belief. That's what my thoughts are alive in. Can I prove that to you or positively show you that that's actually going to happen or has happened? No, not at this moment. Is it possible that I could actually be wrong in my assessment, right? Could that belief be something that I want to be true? Now, that's a big one. See, a lot of times people's beliefs are based on what they want to be true. It could be possible that this is it for me. It's over. I'm not going anywhere after this, and I wasn't anywhere before this. Now, a lot of people don't like to think that because that makes it seem like, that just kind of makes it really seem tragic about life here on Earth. But I look at all, but I answer all those questions to get to a particular point. And here's the point. Whether or not I came from somewhere else and whether or not I'm going somewhere else, I don't have the ability to see really or remember all the details of what happened before. Now, I do have some memories of things that could have happened before, and I don't necessarily have the ability to see into the future to know what's coming up. But I do know in either case, whether this is the only life I have or if I do have the ability to pass on to somewhere else, all I still have right now is what I'm going to do today and right now. So right now I'm on this show. I'm choosing to share these questions to give you an insight into how I look at life and how I evaluate things, and also give you some tools to start to look at yourself honestly. Right now, many of us like to claim that we're honest, right? And that's more of a social thing. I'm an honest person, right? But being honest with yourself goes back to the example I said earlier, right? I may believe something, and I may find all types of ways to prove it, but can I step back and take a look and say, am I unbiased in my belief? Have I truly been open to other ideas or actually analyzed my thoughts to say, you know, I could be wrong, or maybe I'm thinking this because this is what I want to happen? So this is a core area that you can start in, and then you can jump to the next level of where am I, right? Because now we've talked about who we are, what we are. Well, where am I? So most of us will say, well, I'm on the earth. That's a pretty good assessment. I mean, most people would say, yep. And then you could even go deeper. You know, I'm in, like for me right now, I'm at home in Austin, Texas, in the United States. You could say, oh, I'm in my bedroom. I mean, you could even go deeper. But you can look at some things and then ask yourself this question. Well, why do I think I'm on the earth? Have you proven to yourself that you're on the earth, or have you been told all your life that you're on the earth? Now, some of these questions, someone may say, man, it sounds like you're trying to shake the foundation of, yes, I am. That's exactly what I'm doing today. And the reason why I'm getting you to shake the foundation a little bit is for you to start to understand and start to connect and start to figure out where have your beliefs and ideas and things really come from. And if you start to ask questions, this is the reason why a lot of people don't ask these types of questions, because they really don't want to make a change or shake what they've kind of created for themselves. And that's okay. But if you really want to start to grow and be able to move out of old thinking into new thinking, sometimes you're going to have to give up things that you thought were true that you find out later to be false. Now, anyone who has had growth in their life, they have encountered this, meaning they realized that they were in error. They were in sin. Now, that's a powerful combination that I just said. Many people, if you look at the etymology of the word sin in the Bible from an English standpoint, what does sin mean? So many people have believed that, oh, well, I'm doing something against God. I'm doing something that God doesn't want me to do. I'm doing something that people in my church are going to think is wrong. No. Sin is error. It's a mistake. Now, when you look in the scriptures, it says we're all sinners. Of course. We all make errors. We all make mistakes. Even computers have errors, right? And when you have an error, what do you normally do? You normally evaluate that error, and then you recover, or you repent, or you regenerate yourself, or you do something new the next time to avoid that error. You actually learn from it. So the error actually gives you the knowledge to then not make that error again. Now, if you keep making that error over and over again, you're either not catching on to the error, you haven't seen it yet, and that's possible. I mean, we all do that. I've done that in my life. I'll probably continue to do that going forward until someone makes you aware of the error. Or you know of the error and you keep doing it consciously. That's something different, and that's what a lot of people usually are caught in. And that's why it's important to ask these questions, because now you can start to see, well, wait a minute, you can start to see the truthful data that's in front of you and say, okay, wait a minute, I keep having this problem or this situation, and I keep doing it over and over again. Why is that happening? Sometimes you need to be able to evaluate all the data to be able to understand that. So let's go a little bit further. Some of these first questions and the way I approached them were pretty deep and could actually probably be novels on philosophy if you wanted to go deep enough on those. But I want to just get that started to give you an understanding of how powerful questions can be if you start to ask them in a certain way and you use certain language. So the next one would be, you know, I said, where am I? So how long have you been on the earth? Right? Now, most people will say, like for me, I'll say I've been on the earth 45 years. Now, that's a much different statement than saying I'm 45 years old. You see the distinction between those two? Now, here's the distinction. When you say you're a certain age, so if I say I'm 35 years old or I'm 18 years old, you automatically get an image in your mind of what an 18-year-old would be or what a 33-year-old would be. You have created images or you have ideas that's been taught to you from the outside world of how old that person is, what they would do, how they would operate in society, and that may depend on where you're at in the world. That's a personal thing that I've learned over my life. So when people ask me, they say, how old are you or what is your age? I always tell them, well, I've been on the earth for 45 years. Now, some people will look at me and smile, like they'll instantly get it, and they'll say, oh, wow, I haven't heard someone say it that way. And then I explain to them. I said, yes, I'm only talking about the time that I've actually been on the earth according to the sun cycle of what's considered time tracking, right? The day. A day is tracked by the sun going up and down. And that's done over a year, which is still based off the sun. And I say, well, I've been here 45 years, but that doesn't apply to any type of thoughts or any types of things that you may think about a person. Right. If you say to yourself, well, what does a person look like that's been on the earth for 45 years? Well, I mean, you could kind of go back into the age thing, but it's a little bit different. And that's what allows you to start to step out of those conditions that sometimes can get put on you by society. When a person tells you, well, you're this old, you shouldn't be doing that, or you're too old to be doing that, you're too young. You notice there's a lot of great stories of people who've done things that were outside of what they were told. That's where the greatness exists. Greatness doesn't exist in you conforming to what you're told, and then all of a sudden greatness occurs there. That usually doesn't happen. So, again, another question that can start to illuminate certain things in your life. Now, here's the next one. This gets more into the vision. How long do you want to be here on the earth? Now, I've thought about this question. Now, of course, people say, well, you don't have any control when you arrive here and when you leave. And I would say that that seems to be true, but what if it's not true? What if we do have control of how long we stay here? We're just not aware of how to do that. What if we do have influence of how long we can be here? Now, I know we have some influence on that because we can choose what we eat. I can choose to make sure I'm safe when I cross the street, or I can choose to not put myself in dangerous situations, you know. So we definitely have a lot of choice and will in that area. But maybe we don't have as much control as we think we do in certain other areas. But still, it's a great exercise to ask yourself how long, if you do have the ability to be on Earth as long as you want, how long would you want to be here? So me, I answered that question. I said I'd like to be here until I've been on the Earth for about 120 years. So if you look at how long I've been here now, 45 years, roughly that'd be about 75 more years. And I said to myself, well, I think that's enough. I think after 75 years, I'd probably be ready to move on. Now, I may change my mind 5 years from now, maybe tomorrow, or as I get older, you know, we'll see. But those are the types of questions that you can start to ask yourself. Now, what does that do? That starts to open up. Okay, well, what do I want to plan for? What do I want to do? What do I want to do by this time and this time? Right? So these are all important questions as you keep expanding out. And then you can ask another important question, which is probably one of the most powerful questions when you're in any situation in your life, is, you know, how do I feel? Now, you can relate that to the last question. Well, how do I feel about being on the Earth for 120 years? How do I feel even answering this question? Right? Some people may feel fear. Some people may feel like it's not their place to answer that question, right? Like it's like blasphemy, or it's like they try to close their ears. Again, fear. Some people may get angry. I can't believe he asked that question, right? So how do you feel is important, because that's going to open you up to deeper aspects of yourself that are coming up for you to analyze. So when you're asking yourself questions, always think about the question consciously, but also think about, how do I feel? What's going on with me now that I've thought about that? And then the next thing you could go to is saying, well, you know, what is my purpose here on the Earth? Why am I here? What is my personal goal? Now, some people may say, well, what do you mean by personal goal? Well, what is your goal for today? What is your goal for this next year? What is your goal for the next 5 years? What are your goals for the next 10 years? The next 15 years? Here's another question. Have you even thought about the next 5, 10, or 15 years? Have you even thought about what you're going to do later today? Do you even write goals down? Do you operate your day, each day, haphazardly, meaning you just wake up and you just roll into it and you let the day guide you? Or do you actually plan for your day and you get up and you operate on certain key things that you're going to get done for that day and you get them done? Now, of course, there's things that happen throughout the day that may change what you're doing, or kind of change some of your plans. But that's kind of called, you know, going with the flow and rolling with the punches. You know, things happen in life. And a lot of times you run into challenges, but you still had a goal or something you were going to achieve, and you push through it anyway. You're like, no, I'm still going to make it happen. Sometimes you have to adjust. reschedule, change the order, but you still get things done. So how do you normally operate? Take a look at yourself. Look at a whole week. How do you normally operate your week? Are you in control of that week, or is that week in control of you? Do you work a job? What are the normal hours that you work? Are they set every week, or do they change? Do you run a business? Same thing. The times that you work, are they set each week, or are they changing each week? What things in your life are you making progress on? Meaning, if you look back a year ago or 6 months ago, it's something that you were doing then, and now you're looking at yourself now, and you're like, wow, I'm doing so much better. I've achieved a lot of growth here. Let's use an example, like savings, right? 6 months ago, I started saving money. Now I have $6,000 in my bank account. 6 months ago, I had zero. Now I have $6,000. That's a sign of progress. A year ago, I had surgery, and I was, this is actually a personal story of mine, real story. I had surgery, and I was in a cast, and I couldn't walk. Just 2 weeks ago, I started jump roping and doing some light running. That's a lot of progress from 12 months ago up to this point, right? Maybe you were in a smaller home or house, and now you're in a larger place. Maybe you had relationships with someone in the past. The relationship wasn't going that well, and now the relationship's in a much better place. Maybe you have children, and you look back 6 months ago, and you look at them now. Anybody who has children, 6 months ago, there's been a lot of change. Children grow so fast, right? If you even take time just to look at that, you'll see how quickly your children are changing and growing and how you can be a positive influence in that process by actually just taking a step back to look at what's happening in your own environment. So, again, those questions around goals, those are important. You know, what about your body? Look at your body. How much is your body worth? What is your human body, physical body, worth in today's financial markets? What do you think it would be worth? Now, think about it. No one on this earth created that body. At least we don't, you know, at least we don't. No one's proven that, right? But no other human being has created the body. But we're the ones giving value to it. Now, I've done a little research on this myself, on some of the things that the scientists are investing in, trying to understand how we were created. One of these experiments you may have heard of, it's called CERN, and I believe it's out in Switzerland. I may be wrong with the country that it's at, but they built this huge, circular research facility where they're going to be basically ramming particles together to try to find the so-called God particle, or the particle that created the universe or creates life. Now, the initial investment for that, the initial investment, I heard was $13 billion. I believe they have invested much more into that now. I heard that it may be up into the numbers of $60 billion. Now, there may be some people who are keep a very close eye on this with that project. I don't know if it's still going on. I haven't checked into it. But those numbers were important because another mentor of mine mentioned this one day in a meeting, and he said, let's just go with the low number. He said they're trying to recreate how we were created. He goes, so that means at a minimal level, your physical body's worth $13 billion. Now, a lot of people have a problem with that. They'd be like, oh, I'm not, no one said what you're worth. That's a whole nother level. But your physical body, think about it's the most advanced biocomputer available. The things you see in the movies, your body can do. Right? When you see a superhero get cut and the body heals itself instantly, our bodies do that. Just not as fast as what you see in the movies. But our bodies actually do that. Our bodies actually are running processes and doing things that we're not even aware of right now while you're listening to this show. The human body is amazing, and we still don't know. Scientists know just the minute capabilities of the body. They're still not aware of all of the things that we can do. They're still figuring out things about the brain. They have no idea. You know, we think we know some things, but we're just touching the edges. So when you think about that, now look at your body and you say, well, am I treating my body like it's worth $13 billion? That's a good one. And maybe $13 billion is not your number. Maybe you don't even want to go into the numbers. But, again, think about the body was given to you. It's the one thing that you didn't have to work for it. You didn't have to take out a loan on it or any of this stuff, right? Some people treat their cars and their homes and other things better than they do their own personal vehicles, their bodies. So another question would be, what can I do to treat my body better? Or what can I do each day that helps my body run optimally? What nutrition does my body require? That's a much different question than what do I want to eat? See, a lot of times what you want to eat is an emotional decision, right? Oh, I worked hard today. I'm going to have a candy bar. Oh, I worked hard today. I'm going to take myself out and go get a good dinner. But what if you had a way to tap into your body and your body told you exactly what nutritional items it needed at that moment? That would be amazing. Your body's like, oh, I need this, 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 and this, and this. And you instantly would just go eat it because your body's telling you, nutritionally, I need these things. This is going to help me rebuild the scar you have here. It's going to help me help you sleep later and all these things. But we don't have that connection. Now, the fact that I'm bringing that communication up right now, the fact that I'm talking about it, it's possible for us to do that. That's something I think about all the time, right? What if we can create optimal nutritional plans where we're eating exactly what's required for us? Now, if you look at nature, it seems to be that most animals in nature are eating that way. They instinctively know what to go eat. Now, their environment is being disturbed. It's been disturbed by us, by human beings. But normally, they seem to know exactly what they need to eat at all times. So that's something that maybe we can get back to. Maybe we were at that level in the past history. And now because of agriculture and the modernization of food and then marketing and profit over human life and profit over human health has caused us to be distorted in how things are being presented to us. So again, questions that start to make you think about the status of your life and your world and what's going on. Now, here's another one. I'm going to skip to something a little bit more fun. And I'll ask this in a couple different ways. Here's the first one. If you had a magic genie, what would be your three wishes? Now, I think about that one. sometimes. The first wish that I would have would be I would want to be able to speak and understand every language that exists on the earth. Now, some people are like, what? One of my friends was like, that's not a very good wish. And I was like, think about it. I would be able to communicate with every single human being on the earth. I'm definitely not going to have any problems with money. I mean, that's not going to be an issue. Plus, I got two more wishes. So I could, you know, do that. So let's say the second wish, you know, people can give you can give people a number, but I could just say, hey, I have all the money that's required for me to do whatever I choose to do in my life. Now, here's the next question. Here's one that people ask a lot of times. Like, you know, I hear it said in many different ways. If money was no issue, what would you do? And I'll say it in a different way. If all of your basic necessities were taken care of, and sometimes this is better for people because it's just a little bit more down to earth, meaning all your bills, you got a check each month that paid for your rent, your mortgage, your car payments, your insurance, food, clothing, health care, everything for your family, savings, donations, even you have money to go have fun, go out. Everything that you do in your life now, plus the things that you want to do, are all covered. What would you do each day? What would you do? Would you still go to your same job? Would you still keep that job? Would you still be operating in your business that you may have, but that you've started? Would you still associate with the same people? Would you still live in the same city? This question I love because, again, it starts to have you honestly look at yourself. Like for me, the majority of things that I'm doing right now in my life, I would still be doing. I probably would move and live in a couple of different cities. I definitely would be a little bit closer to my mother and sister. I still would be running my business because I love what I'm doing. There's a few other consulting opportunities that I've been doing that I probably would stop immediately. So, see, even in my life, I've identified a few things. You know what? I would stop that next week. Just because I thought it was going to be good, but when I got into it, I just didn't enjoy it as much as I wanted. And there's some good financial aspects to it. But if those financial aspects weren't there, meaning everything's taken care of for me, I wouldn't continually do that, right? So I think that's one of the major questions that you can always ask yourself, because money is it's so tied in into everything that we do, especially in the United States. A lot of what we call the Western world, you know, Western countries, Australia, you know, European countries, some of the modern countries in Asia, Singapore, Japan, you know, India, pretty much everywhere you go, money is impacting every level of life. There's a lot of areas of the world still where people are living off very little, and they're just trying to get, you know, drinking water and food for that next day. That question's a little bit different for people that don't really have their basic needs met, but it still kind of correlates to the same things, right? And so if you really use that question, you can really start to align yourself in your life to say, hey, am I doing the things that I really want to do? You know, if you go back to some of the other questions, who am I? You know, what am I? You could also say, who do I want to be? Right? We've heard that too. Like, who do I choose to be? Who do I want to be in this life? Who are the people that I respect? Who are the people that I would like to emulate? What qualities do I want to emulate that I've seen in other people? You can keep going with these questions. So I'm going to kind of leave it there with that last question around, you know, what would you do? You know, another way to say it, if time and money wasn't an issue and nothing could get in your way, what would you really want to do? How would you spend your days? How would you invest your time each day and each night? So we'll end it there. I appreciate you letting me on today. We did a little change up, which is what I love about the Sudden Eye Impact Show, is you really don't know what you're going to get every time you show up. And today I was focused on questions. And there's a lot more that you can ask yourself and we can go through in the future. But again, thank you for taking the time to listen. If you'd like to talk to me further and have any interest in possibly working with me as a client or hearing more about some of the programs and coaching that I offer, you can reach me at Jaron, J-A-R-O-N, at dreampoweracademy.com. Or you can always reach out to the Sudden Eye Impact Show and connect through Dwight, and he can lead you to the right connection to me as well. Thanks again for having me, and I'll pass the microphone back to Mr. Dwight Lee and let him close us out. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jaron Banks. Every time I grace the platform, I'm aiming to do a couple things. I'm aiming to inspire hope with rhythm, love, and care. And I'm aiming to save a life or help rebuild a life. I think Jaron did an excellent job on some of the key points I wanted to catapult on. I wanted to inspire a shift in consciousness. I wanted to inspire a shift in vibration. I wanted to inspire each person to be authentic with themselves. I wanted to inspire each person to be clear within themselves. I wanted to inspire each person to act creatively. And I wanted to inspire each individual to link up with the God that indwells them. And in all actuality, Jaron Banks already did that. So I applaud him on that. That's one less assignment I have to handle. Thank you, Jaron. The human brain processes 400 billion bytes of information per second. The human brain has 100 billion cells that each have 10,000 branches or connections. And interwoven and intertwined in those branches and connections are your beliefs, your thoughts, your patterns, and your behaviors, your emotional traumas, your mental traumas, your physical traumas, your frustrations, your failures, your nightmares, your dreams, your tendencies, your likes, your dislikes, smells, tastes, memories, fairy tales, fantasies, muscle memories, etc. You literally have the power, if you strongly desire to, you could change and rearrange anything. And through changing and rearranging things, you would change and rearrange your life. I'm talking about molecules, molecular structures, atoms, protons, neutrons, electrons. I'm talking about you have the capacity and propensity to change a $10 bill into a $100 bill. A $50 bill into a $500 bill, a $100 bill into a $1,000 bill. There is no limits to what you can do once you understand who you are, whose you are, and what power you have. The average person has between 60,000 to 70,000 thoughts per day. And the statistics clearly indicate that we are conscious of about 5% of those thoughts. So I'm going to use the lower number. 60,000. That would indicate that we are conscious of about 3,000 thoughts per day. So the first question that I'm at liberty to ask is to each individual, what goal, what target, what assignment are you giving those 3,000 thoughts that you are conscious of in your life
to cause growth, to cause more fulfillment, to cause better mental health, to cause more health, more joy, more peace, more happiness, more income, a better job, or improve your business if you have one? And then the second question that I'm at liberty to ask is an even better question. What about the 57,000 thoughts that you are unconscious of and that are running rampant on autopilot with no deviation? What are you thinking within yourself to bring those automatic thoughts into captivity with a system of checks and balances so you can get your life on a path or process to thought transformation, which would ultimately lead your entire life to full transformation? Do you have the tenacity to challenge every single thought until the only thing left in your brilliant mind are thoughts that have deep resonance with you or that you allow to dwell in your brilliant mind? Now we're going to go to a quick short lesson of neuroplasticity, also known as the rewiring of your brain. Neural networks that fire together rewire together. And basically what this is doing is changing your mental programming from concepts, precepts, patterns, habits, and behaviors that no longer serve you to concepts, precepts, patterns, habits, and behaviors that do serve you. Let's dive into this even deeper. So I'm going to do a process that has worked for me by my observation. So I'm going to immediately bypass your amygdala, which is usually associated with fight, flight, or freeze, meaning do nothing, and your thalamus. And I'm going to bring a heightened awareness and attention to your cerebral cortex, your neocortex, your cerebellum, and your reticular activating system. And, oh, let me tell you two things. Your spirit and mind believes your voice more than anyone else's. And it's sort of like an aha moment when you hear yourself on the recorder for the first couple of times. It sounds weird or funny, but it's really not. And that's why many who set out or start out with confession and affirmations don't persist, because they get caught up in how it sounds. And instead of talking themselves into their dreams, they talk themselves out of their potential greatness. I'm sorry, back off that tangent. So what I need everybody to do is to get into a mood and attitude of gratitude. Why are we doing this? We're doing this so that we can begin to release the right substance and sustenance known as neurotransmitters, hormones, and endorphins, such as anandamide, oxytocin, dopamine, and serotonin, to name a few. What does this do? Basically, our body secretes these enzymes, and these enzymes, these releases, can put us in different states, like a calm, tranquil state, a happy state, a joyful state, or a blissful state. Why is this important? This is important because when you're hearing information that's not familiar to you or that's new to you, you have a blocker up and it automatically rejects the deposit. But if you release these enzymes, they create the atmosphere for heart and brain coherence, where both your heart and your brain open up and become receptive to receiving this information, and the information will penetrate down to your core, which will allow you to receive the information and have it available to you, ready and usable to apply in life situations. And this is important because when you get this specialized knowledge, this exact knowledge, and this in-depth knowledge, it helps you move forward and face the things that happen to you in life with positivity instead of fear and negativity. Meaning
you rise up and take your rightful place instead of shrinking and bowing down and let circumstances, conditions, and problems run over you. Now I want everybody to use their imagination. And I want you to visualize all of us going into a home, a two-story home built in 1950. We're going to enter the home and go directly up the stairs to the attic. And we'll be awestruck and startled at what we see. The amount of dust will probably cause us to cough, the cobwebs and spider webs. So it is with your brain. In the good book, in Romans 12:3, it says to be ye transformed and renewed by the renewing of your mind. And although it doesn't apply it or imply it, it means that you are to do this every day. So imagine that our mind is similar to that attic. You see what's in that attic. You ought to see what's in your mind. When you don't manage your mind, all kinds of stuff gets in there. And the stuff that we can't see is the exact stuff that's causing us problems. So in order to clear our mind, to protect our mind, and be good stewards over our mind, we have to begin to challenge every thought, every belief. And Jay Banks touched on this. We can't just buy every person's perspective. And walking at work or going to and from, even to your car, you hear different things. And these things are attaching themselves to you, to your physical body, and to your mind. They're getting into you. Kind of like cars on the Autobahn in Germany, racing to and from. That's how thoughts are. Because thoughts, there's 7 billion or more people thinking. So thoughts are everywhere, and they're just getting into your system. So if you allow those thoughts to enter your system unhindered and unchecked, this points to why you're having a lot of the problems that you're having, because there's all kinds of stuff that's inside you, intertwined inside you, indwelling you, that you're not aware of, and you haven't figured out that it's there, so you can't remove it. So I admonish every person to begin to challenge every single thought, every single belief. We must begin to put our thoughts on paper and our beliefs on paper so we can see what we are believing, so we can see what we are habitually thinking, and we can course correct by speaking words of, over these thoughts that uproot and kick those thoughts out, and then we can plant more fertile, more fruitful, more powerful thoughts to take the place of those things, and they can begin to cause good fruit to come forth instead of the bad fruit because we were unaware of what was lying resonant within us. I want to continue down this journey, the difference between managing the mind and not managing the mind. And I'm going to use the cover of Rich Dad, Poor Dad. So the left side of the equation, at the top, it has the E for employee. At the bottom, it has the S for self-employed. At the top of the right side, it has the B for business owner, and it has the I at the bottom for investor. The left side of the equation and the right side of the equation. I'm going to suggest by my observation that the left side of the equation represents people that are using their five senses. See, smell, hear, taste, and touch. And the right side of the equation, by my observation, I'm going to insist that the people are utilizing their sixth sense, or what we call the mental faculty. Imagination, intuition, memory, perception, reason, and will. Now, the number that I'm going to use is 8 billion. It's not drawn to scale. Probably hasn't happened yet, but I'm just going to imagine and use as a diagram that we have 8 billion workers in some capacity. So the left side of the equation in population is going to represent 98% of the people, meaning 7,920,000,000 people. And the right side of the equation is going to represent 2% or 80 million people. So the left side of the equation is the majority in population, but is the minority in controlling financial resources, financial instruments, and money, 2%. Whereas the right side of the equation is the polar opposite. It is 2% or 80 million people in population and controls 98% of the world's wealth, financial resources, financial instruments, and money. So what I'm saying here is I'm creating a diagram that's suggesting that no way possible should it be that 80 million people are worth more than 7,920 million people. And even though the numbers are not drawn to scale and they're not exact, it's just an example and a diagram. The principle, if you was to study it out, it still rings true. And I submit this truth to you so you can figure out how to get to the right side of the equation instead of saying on the left side of the equation. And in closing, I want to give you Proverbs 13:22, Part B, in my own words. Wealth is laid up for whosoever works the life principles as it relates to the golden rule, the law of cause and effect, or sowing and reaping, economics, and the law of compensation. So to support the lesson that I gave, the quick lesson that I gave, here's a quote from Dr. Ken McFarland. He said, 2% of people think, 3% of people think that they think, and 95% of people would rather die than think. That's from Dr. Ken McFarland. Earl Nightingale said, the strangest secret is we become what we think about. Ralph Waldo Emerson said, a man is what he thinks about all day long. Buddha said, all that we are is the sum total of our thoughts. Thinking is very, very important, and I want everybody to understand. Life happens to everybody. But the state that we are in can be connected directly to our thoughts and beliefs. So I admonish everybody. I'm pleading with everybody. Please take ownership over your mind and become a good steward over your thoughts and your belief. Be the change that you want to see. First, you will change, then your world will change, and then everything in it. Until the next Sudden Eye Impact show, do what you know to do with all diligence and release your faith.
Discover the power of positivity. Identify your gifts. Then plan and execute your passion. And ultimately, thrive exponentially in life and most importantly in business. On Sudden Eye Impact with your host, Lee.